The county's number one talk show, the 9 till noon show on Highland Radio.
Good morning. Very welcome back to the 9 till noon show. We are live here, of course, broadcasting from our studios in Letterkenny, across the northwest on air and across the world online. And you can contact us wherever you are via WhatsApp or text if you want to get involved in the show or raise an issue, pass on a comment. 086 60 25,000, outside the Republic, 00 353 86 60 25,000. And many of our wonderful Donegal people who are living abroad now, be it London, Dubai, UAE more generally, Australia, the United States, often listen on their smart speakers, but also choose to track us on Facebook, which is great, or on YouTube. And amongst those watching on YouTube today, Kathleen, Cathy, Audrey, good morning to all of you, and I'll pass on your good wishes to the team here at Highland Radio as well. We just heard a clip in the news, and we mentioned it earlier on in the show as well, about the proposal to extend free contraception from 17 to 16. 17 is the age of consent in this country. And you heard the argument there, I believe, from Stephen Donnelly, why he believes it should be extended to 16-year-olds. If contraception is free for women, contraception should be free for men too, says the listener. It's not fair that only women are entitled to free contraceptions. Condoms should be available to men and women. Yeah, I think, you know, there's probably a bit to that in that women might be more inclined to take it effectively and what have you as well. So I think if it's going to be free in one direction, it's probably free at that stage until such time as a male pill is fully developed. A caller says, I'm appealing my defective concrete block grant. I got in contact with the county council, who told me that I have to get in touch with the Department of Housing. I rang the Department of Housing and it goes straight to messages. Anyone who contacted the department in Dublin got an answer back. The number I rang is 1-888-2000. They've left a message, no answer back. So I don't know how quickly answers should come back. I can't see why people not paying their TV licence don't be penalised in some way. When their taxes are done, they can clearly see if it's paid or not. How many are prosecuted and have to pay the 1,000? It's not 1,000, but I take your point. Or maybe that's the fine. This is why they wanted it to be brought underneath the control of revenue. Because you may well have a house with no TV, or you know, nowadays you might have a TV with no house. But so it's hard to track if you've never paid your licence, if you have to pay it, and so on and so forth. That's why they want the household charge, or they want it collected by revenue. Hi, Greg. Why are councillors consistently avoiding the option of the council buying land which is abundantly available and building social housing? Blaming the Department of Housing is unacceptable. Funding is available at national level. Councillors need to apply for social housing. I understand your comment. It's a little bit more complex than that. But listen, thank you very much indeed for that. Back to defective concrete. Hi, Greg. Anyone else experiencing long delays with DBS, the defective block scheme? My application was sent in May. I was told a decision would be made by September. I was approved for next stage as my cracks meet the threshold. The next inspection will not be carried out until quarter one 2025. So that's January, February, or March. At this rate, the listener says, any work on my home won't be started until 2026. There are so many people who haven't even applied. They will not be looked at until the 2030s at this rate, they believe. Please highlight this. The scheme's not helping us. It's being designed effectively to slow the process down. So those of you that have gone through the scheme, is this timeline unusual? Perhaps you can get in touch with us and we can share it with this listener. They applied in May, got a decision in September. The next inspection will not be carried out until the first 3 months of next year. So they believe that work on their home won't even start until 2026. Is that a typical experience? Right. So here's an interesting one just before we take a break. I was recently on a night out, says the listener, in a pub when I got a can of something. I said to the bar girl, I've paid the recycling fee on that can, so I'll take it with me. She refused and said, we're not allowed to give you them back. Imagine my outrage the next morning when I saw one of the bar owners at the recycling unit getting the refund for a load of cans. Now, I suppose in a, you know, tight profit margin business, they can you can probably see why they might. So effectively, you go into a bar, you order a can of Coke, and you've paid a deposit on that can, or the retail, who's paid the deposit? Maybe it's the bar owner that's paid the deposit. But anyway, they pour it for you and you say, excuse me, can I have that can? I'm going to recycle that. They say, no, 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 the policy is we hold on to these cans. Right, so we got onto the company behind this, Tenio, to find out actually what the rules and regulations are in relation to that. It's kind of interesting. It's not going to affect a lot of people, but I thought it would be an interesting question. And it reads as follows, the answer. The hospitality sector is split between on-site consumption and off-site consumption. Businesses that predominantly cater for on-site consumption do not have to charge a deposit for in-scope products. The rationale for this is that the empty containers remain on the premises and are collected on site. It's up to each establishment to determine whether to charge the deposit. If a deposit is charged, the consumer can take their container off site. If the deposit is not charged, then the business is responsible for collecting the containers and taking them to a return point operator to reclaim the deposit. So really, if this person needs to say, well, have you charged me the deposit in this can? Because if you have, the can's mine. If you haven't, the can's yours. But anyway, when a customer is charged a deposit on a drinks container, this deposit should be reflected on the customer's receipt or proof of payment. Establishments are required to make the customer aware if a deposit has been charged and inform them that they will need to take the container off-site to a reverse vending machine to get the deposit back. If a consumer is charged a deposit in a cafe or restaurant, they are entitled to that container. If a consumer is denied their container after being charged a deposit by a cafe or restaurant, please inform Return and we'll investigate. So it's as trivial to some as it is complex. The restaurant or bar or what have you should, if they're charging you a deposit, it should be represented on your receipt. Firstly, they need to be doing that. If they are doing that, the can's yours. So you can say, no, I'm sorry, you've charged me a deposit, that can's mine. If it's not charged and it's not present on the receipt, then they retain the can and they haven't charged you the deposit. So there you go. Complicated. It's as complicated as you'd like. All right. Take care. Thank you for that. Now we're joined on the program by Kathleen Arkinson, whose sister is, of course, Arlene Arkinson. Kathleen, thanks for joining us this morning. And it's another horrible roller coaster, I'm sure, of emotions for you and your family following the closure of this most recent search. How are you keeping?
Well, God, I thought, you know, Arlene wasn't there. It was an ideal place. But like, we like to thank the Garda and the Garda Síochána and the wee dog Charlie and all was involved in the search. The digger drivers and everyone that was involved. And also we'd like to thank people that prayed at Knock and sent prayers and had statues in their house. And we won't still give up the hope for Arlene. And also like to thank our solicitor, Dave Doherty and Co and Derry. And they were like ordinary, you know, like they're ordinary people to watch them, to do that, to look for our wee sister. It was heartbreaking for them, it was heartbreaking for us. And like we couldn't stay long because every 5 minutes was precious for them. And we understood that and like, we like to thank them from the very bottom of our hearts that what they've done for Ireland, we're like, we can't be so grateful, you know, we can't be like, we can't say enough, you know, to be grateful for like what they put into the work, and they were determined to find Ireland.
It must be so difficult for you, because of course you have the hope that Arlene might be found, but also at the same time you've the fear of another disappointment, that another search ends without success, and then how many more of these searches might there be into the future? So it must be awful ups and downs for you and the family, Kathleen.
Look, it's been up and down for the last 30 years, and then it's with Arlene's vigil been 30 years. It was just a month from that, you know, Arlene's anniversary was the 13th of August, and it would have been just nearly a month just run into, you know, since the vigil, and everything just, you know, we just for sure Arlene was there, and like, we'd like to appeal for like anybody with any information to come forward. Doesn't matter how small it is, like, it might be small to them, but could be like, you know, very vigil for the, for like, for us and for like the people that are doing the searches,
It's very possible that someone out there knows something, that maybe they saw something or they were told something and they've carried it with them now for 30-odd years. And maybe they're getting older, maybe they're getting towards the end of their life. If there is, and it maybe it's, I don't know if it's likely or unlikely, but I mean, maybe they could even be listening to this programme today or see the news article when it's published on our website. Bottom line is you know, if anyone out there has any information at all to pass it on.
Yes, please come forward and say something, because we need to find Aileen to give Aileen a decent burial. And we need to thank everyone. And we also are still not giving up our hope of finding Aileen. And we also will still going ahead for a public inquiry and see what happened and was in the case of Aileen from start to now. And we won't give up. We are going to fight for this public inquiry. We need it. We need unanswered questions that we have not gotten.
What are the key unanswered questions before? I'll come back to that. I just want to wrap up just the questions on the search. So this search, the most recent search, the second this year in Donegal in Ballybough, Benin Forest near Clohan. How do these searches come to pass? Is it information that the investigating team come across? Is it information that the family have that they pass on? Or you know, how are these search sites determined? Or can you reveal that, Kathleen?
I can't comment on anything like that there, you know, like how these searches come along, because, you know, it's probably vital information from the public. Mm. As I say, I would, you know, anybody out there that knows anything, you know, to come forward. And, like, it doesn't matter how small it is, but as I said, I can't comment any further on anything else, and I can't say will there be more searchers or there will not be more searchers at this stage.
No problem.
Because, like,
Kathleen, are you convinced Robert Howard killed Aileen, or do you believe?
Yes, from the bottom of my heart, Bob Howard murdered my wee sister. Mm. On that night.
So you don't hold you don't hold out any hope that she's alive at this point?
No, definitely not. Yeah. No. Aileen was a homebird.
Yeah.
Aileen was like,
she would have found her way home by now, one way or other.
Aileen wouldn't have done that. Aileen wasn't that type of person. Aileen was just a family girl. She was her baby sister, you know. Mm. She needed anything she wanted. She got it. No, not got anything she wanted.
Yes.
But she was a child. She was just, you know, a typical 14-year-old.
In relation to an inquest, what questions remain unanswered for the family, Kathleen?
Well, I'm not commenting on that at this stage. Mm. But when we get the full public inquiry, hopefully we get it, because I'm not going to stand back and not fight for it. We as a family, there's only me, my sister, and my brother, Eddie, is left now, as we've lost a whole lot of siblings, my twin brother and other sisters, and my father, since Aileen was murdered, and our mammy was died that late 1990. But we are not going to stand back, and, you know, we want a full public inquiry, unanswered questions, like PAAs, right, and a 15-year-old child. Unbelievable. There's no call for it. And for the jury and 205, we do not blame the jury in no manner of way, never did. The jury did not know of his past or his background.
Yeah,
but it also must be known as on 2:05, Aileen's trial didn't start till 23rd of May. And that April, that new law came out. Anybody starting with a history like Robert Howard's the jury was meant to know his background. Although he was sitting there and he kicked his shoes off. That's how sure he was. He kicked his shoes off in the dock. And he was in for murdering wee Hannah Williams in England. He was doing a sentence. And that new law came in that April, and our trial for Ireland didn't start till the 3rd of May. I want people to know that as well. Mm-hmm. That is like, the jury should have knew. It's unbelievable. The first verdict, not guilty. Disgrace. Disgrace. And for the PNSA or UC, whatever, they should have done a lot more. 46 days. That's a disgrace. 46 days to lift a monster like Howard on a record that he had. They got rid of the car. Howard had the chance to get rid of vital evidence.
I understand where you're coming from. Listen, Kathleen, we hope you get the answers that you want. I do appreciate it, and unfortunately it's the end of another search with no positive news. But for now, Kathleen Arkinson, thank you very much indeed. I do appreciate your time, and I'm sure anyone who has any information who's known to the case known publicly has passed on any information, I'm sure, about that. Okay, let's take this break. Okay, we all love Donegal. Justin Leonard runs a X account. We love Donegal, and is joining us in the programme now. Good morning to you, Justin. Thanks for your time.
Good morning. Hey, Greg. I don't actually run the account. I'm just one of the fans of the account, and that's how the conversation came about.
I get you, Justin. Well, you run it in your support, let's just say like that. You're adjunct, you're adjacent. Justin, that's okay, no problem. And the topic came up in conversation about utilising potentially that beautiful old railway line through Barnes Moor Gap as a greenway, a recycle way.
Yeah, well, they posted a photo yesterday of Barnes Moor, and I said, I've passed through Barnes Moor Gap many, many a time. Going up to Bally Buffet and on up to Derry. And I've always asked the question, how come that has never been developed as a greenway? Because it's ideal. Mm-hmm. And the railway line has been closed since, I think, the late 50s. And obviously, if you know the Barnes Moor Gap, it's a beautiful area. And it really would be an ideal greenway. And I just can't understand how nobody's ever come up with the idea or got around to saying, why don't we develop it?
Yeah, well, there has been moves. Now, I don't know where they are now, but I remember back in, I think it was 2023, and I think more recently, I'm almost 100% sure I did an interview on this, Justin, in that a public consultation on a Barnes Moor Gap Greenway project was launched. At that time, it was in the options selection stage, which effectively means, you know, what are the potential routes? And I seem to recall doing an interview about it, and I presumed that the old railway line would be used, but that was one of the options and not the only option that was there. And I think it would link into other plans coming from Bally Buffet, Stranorlar. So really, it definitely has been talked about. There's definitely a consultation. I suppose what we need to find out now is where it's at.
Yeah, because, I mean, you've seen in the last year the Royal Canal, they've opened the greenway, and there's about five or six proper greenways around Ireland. And, up in the northwest there, that Barnes Moor Gap railway line would just be the ideal one to have. You wouldn't believe, I'd say, the amount of people who'd actually go to visit Donegal just to take that trip through the Barnes Moor Gap.
Well, I'd argue it would be the jewel in the crown of greenway cycleways.
Yeah, absolutely. And the fact that it's well off the road, it's ideal. You know, the railway line is situated up, you know, well away from the road, so it'd be perfectly safe. And I wouldn't expect it would, you know, in the scheme of things, it would cost an awful lot to do. Just, I suppose, you know, where there's a will, there's a way. And I think it's just a no-brainer.
Mm-hmm. Well, what we'll do, Justin, is we're going to get back in contact with people that we spoke about and see how plans are progressing, or maybe there's preferred options, or maybe it's been scrapped altogether. But as I say, it would be great to capitalise and build on that public consultation that took place a couple of years ago. And we'll find out and see where it's going, Justin.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, as I said, it's probably one of the most beautiful parts of the country, Donegal, and especially up in Barnsmore. I'd say that the people would love to see it happen.
Yeah, I'd be amongst those. I'd love to see the railway back on it, to be honest with you, but that's a different story altogether.
Yeah. But that's the thing. Like, my father-in-law told me the stories that he used to get the train from Killybegs all the way to Dublin. Yeah. And I says, God, when was that? And he said, when I was a kid, like back in the day. And I said, when did it finish up? And he said, late 50s, it closed. And that was it. It's just lying empty ever since. So, I mean, it's there to be used. So someone should, you know, crack on and get going with it.
We were so quick in lifting the infrastructure. I mean, even in London, say, for instance, the Underground, the Tube there are lines that are completely discontinued, unused, and they're still functioning tracks. The tracks were left there, the tunnels were left there, and yet we, in an instant, you know, lifted all our infrastructure, which breaks my heart.
But yeah.
Here we are. All right, Justin, listen, stay tuned. We're going to find out more about it and see what the crack is.
Super. Thanks for the call, Greg.
No, thank you for taking our invite. Okay, Justin Leonard there. So I'm sure there's loads of you out there, and not particularly old either, that have memories of the rail lines, the railways. Did you travel from Creasla to Burton Port? Did you travel from Donegal Town to Ballybuffet or out to Killybegs? Did you use the old stop that used to be there? Between Lahey and Ballantra. If you have any stories that you would like to talk about or share about the railways in Donegal, please let us know. 086 60 25 000, or maybe you know your mum or dad or were involved in the railways or rode on the trains or run the trains or had any involvement. I'm fascinated with the fact that, you know, there are still people, still young people who had the pleasure of travelling around Donegal on rail. And maybe it wasn't a pleasure. I'd love to know what it was like and how useful it was, and what you could see, what the conversation, what the buzz on the trains was at that time. So if you have those memories, please share them with us. Call me on 074 91 25 000, 074 91 25 000, or if you prefer you can give us a text, 086 60 25,000. So yesterday on the 9 till noon show, we revealed a number of drink and drug driving incidents in Donegal last weekend. The Gardaí on the programme yesterday described them as extremely worrying. Some of the detections included a driver in Letterkenny. He was 12 times the legal limit. I don't know if it's a he or she, by the way, but anyway, they were 12 times the legal limit. The car was out of tax for 837 days. That shouldn't happen, but it pales almost into insignificance when someone can be that over the limit. There were other drivers detected 3.5 times over the limit. So that's what's being detected. What's going on undetected? It really is very concerning. And Julie Patton's with me now, and her son Shane was just 18 years of age when he was killed by a drunk driver in July 2012. And Julie, thanks for speaking to me again. And I can only imagine, as a parent who had their son robbed by the actions of a drunk driver, 2012, you must say, wow, we're 12 years on and things aren't improving. In fact, statistics show in some cases the level of drink driving is actually getting worse.
Yeah, it just doesn't seem to be any end to it. There just seems to be people don't realise that how dangerous it is to get in a car with drink or drugs on them. Possibly there's not enough Garda presence on our roads at the moment, but that's not the Garda's fault. That's beyond their control. They are only given the hours that they can, and they're doing what they can. But there's not enough enforcement out there for or Garda checkpoints, which would be a deterrent for people.
Yeah, because I think people feel they're not going to get caught because they're prepared to risk it.
They're prepared to risk it, and the legislation is not being enforced either. You know, like, people can go out and they could be over the limit, and then they're going to court and they're using excuses like, I need the car to drive, and their excuses are working for them, and they're not losing their license. Like, the law's there and the legislation's there that they should lose their license if they're over the limit.
I don't know of any sort of area of law, like road traffic law, where tens and tens of thousands of people seem to know how to exploit it or what they can get away with. I don't know where they're getting the information. If it's online, is it legal advice? I don't know. But even in terms of not handing in your licence if you're disqualified and a million other workarounds, Julie, it just seems an area of law that needs to be completely rewritten sometimes, because there's so many loopholes that people are exploiting in massive numbers.
Yeah, it seems to be that I don't know where they get their information or advice from either, but it just seems to be that they seem to be able to get that information and use it to the best of their own advantage. What people do not realise is a car is a lethal weapon on the road, and every time you get onto it, you should treat it with caution.
Well, let's try and remind people of that, Julie, what potentially can happen, because, you know, it is not, I can't get a taxi, I'm just going to risk it, or who cares, I'll not get stopped. There are consequences. Driving is very, very difficult if you do it properly and concentrate sober. And then people do it under the influence of alcohol. And it's not only themselves often they kill and injure. It's often other people, like your son Shane. They rob him of all of his life and his prospects and opportunities, and rob a mother and family of the opportunity to see that person grow into the man that you expect him to. And I don't think anyone would want that on their conscience. So talk to me about Shane and his passing, Julie.
Shane was 18. He was the eldest of my three children. He was just finished his leaving certificate. He was going out for a night with his friends. They were just going on to Lurkenny. And he had just got to the bottom of our road whenever a car was coming. The car was speeding, so in normal circumstances, he would have time to cross the road. The car was doing 165 kilometres an hour, and the driver was drunk. Now, to me, that driver has shown no resource. He ended up getting an 18-month prison sentence for killing my son, which took 8 years for that to come to terms, and he was out in 11 months. So he didn't even get a year or a month for every year of Shane's life. And that's the way I look at it.
With all the pain, we as a family have
been robbed of Shane.
Yeah, and with all the pain, yeah, Julie, that obviously you'd be going through, and that case then obviously hanging over you and the family for 8 years. How did it feel? I suppose A, when that sentence was handed down, but B, when you learned that the person responsible only served 11 months. How did that make you feel in your already horrible space of grief?
I just felt that for us as a family, there was no justice done. And that's all I can say. Like, we had no justice for Shane's death.
No.
A death that was through no fault of his own.
Man, the judiciary didn't put a very high price on a very important person's life.
Yeah. Like, that driver was able to plead careless driving for killing somebody. To me, careless driving should not be taken into consideration for when there's a death on the road. And careless driving carries a maximum sentence of 2 years.
And Julie, you know, I'm sure there's many Gardaí who would share your frustration, you know, pursuing a case, gathering the evidence, getting it before the courts. You know, it's not their fault, as we all know, Julie, but it must be incredibly frustrating from their perspective as well.
Yeah, it has to be, like, for the work that they have done, theirs, they have put in, it goes to the EPP. In our case, it had to be an extradition because he fled the country. Mm-hmm. So the hours and hours upon work that the Gardaí done, that civil servants done to get the extradition warrant in place for somebody to end up spending 11 months in prison just doesn't seem plausible.
Lots of people probably have stories of seeing someone getting into a car drunk. Yesterday we heard from Garda Grainne Doherty, and she appealed to the public to always report suspected instances of drink or drug driving to Gardaí. And also, which an interesting comment she made as well, is that, you know, if you've got someone close to you who consistently drink and drugs, or drink or drugs drive, to report them to the Gardaí too? Two difficult questions to ask, but no-brainers from your position, I'm sure, Julie, that if you do see, or if people see, people engaging in this behaviour, would you share the Garda view that they should be reported ASAP?
Yeah, I definitely think somebody that sees anybody getting into a car that they are, ring 999 and report it. Get the number plate of the car, get the direction it's going in, the colour of the car if you can, and a description, and let the guards know. And you will have no regrets that you possibly could have saved somebody's life on our roads.
Yeah, indeed. Julie, listen, much love as always. Thanks so much for speaking to us.
Can I just mention, Greg, can I just say that as part of IRVA, I just want to pass on my condolences and sympathies to all the families that have lost loved ones recently on our roads, because mm-hmm. we have had a lot of tragedies. Especially in Nanny Joan, and just to say that if anybody needs to reach out, we have a helpline and a guide that if anybody needs, we would be willing to
assist
if they want to ring us, support groups or that, to get in contact with us.
Okay, we'll get those numbers off, and I'll give that a good push a little later on, because as you mentioned, six people lost their lives on our roads in recent weeks. That's six devastated communities, devastated families. These people had a really important role to play in our lives, and they make up now a total of 131 people who've died on our roads nationally, and a lot of them avoidable. Julie, thank you so much for your time, and best wishes to you and all. Thank you. That's Julie Patton there. She lost her son Shane. He was just 18 years and had just completed his leaving cert. And was killed by a drunk driver travelling at 165 kilometres per hour in July of 2012. And it took to 2020 before that case was resolved. And as you heard from Julie there, the person responsible ended up serving 11 months, less than a month per year of Shane's life. Right, OK. I'm joined on the programme now by GP Dr. Sarah Brennan. Good morning to you, Sarah. Thank you very much for your time.
Hello. Hi there, Greg. How are you doing?
Good, thank you.
Can you hear me?
Yes, loud and clear. So we heard from the Health Minister. He wants to expand free contraception to include 16-year-olds. At the moment, it's free to women aged between 17 to 35. Stephen Donnelly wants this lowered. There is some resistance from within his own department because it might be seen by some to conflict with the legal age of consent, which is 17. But you're on the front line, the coal face, so to speak, Dr. Brennan. What's your view?
Yeah, and just to discuss that, I suppose, I work in the eyelash clinic, which is in the Women's Centre, and that's a clinic for women and girls under the age of 25. And there's no lower limit there, if you like. So we see young girls all the time who are in relationships and who are having sexual intercourse and who understand that they may become pregnant. And they come to us to take steps in an autonomous way to take care of themselves so that they don't become pregnant, because they're young, they've the whole life ahead of them, and it's really important that they have access to that care. So that's what's happening on the ground. In terms of medical ethics, we use the Gillick competency framework, where we understand that when somebody knows that they're engaging in an act that can cause them to become pregnant, when they understand that and they understand that there is treatment there that can help prevent pregnancy, that then they are able to give consent. And this age of consent doesn't really, it's not really applicable in this instance, because they have that understanding and they understand that they can take this medication to stop that.
But just in relation to that then, using that matrix or whatever it might be called, then does that mean the age of consent in using that method could be 13 or 14 also?
Absolutely, absolutely. And in fact, I worked in a children's hospital years ago in Crumlin, And I would have always gotten consent from a child even and explained in children's way to the children about the procedure they were having so that they gave me consent. And really, parents are there as guardians to protect their children, and that's really, really important. And they give consent as well. But consent is always primarily with the person undergoing that procedure or taking that particular medication.
Mm-hmm. So if someone is knowingly having sex, despite the law, the age of consent being 17, and obviously then, we, you know, maybe other supports might have to be put in place or other checks to be made. But are you saying that, are you of the belief that if someone is aware of what sex is, they're having sex, and they also know what the consequences of having sex could be, i.e. getting pregnant, do you believe then contraception should be given free to anyone, even if they're under 16?
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely, for sure. And in fact, I suppose if you take the termination of pregnancy treatment that's out there, that's from age 16 up. So certainly it should align with that, because it doesn't make sense to have free access to a termination of pregnancy, which has significant psychological impact on oneself. We should have free contraception as well from that age. But absolutely, girls younger than 16, we're happy to give them contraception when they meet all those criterion. And another criterion is that we talk to them about disclosing this to their parents, because they are the guardians and they do behave in the best interests of mm-hmm. their kids. And it's important for them to know that they're on this medication and that it may have side effects, so that they can be there to protect them if anything were to go wrong. And we really love when young girls especially bring in their parents. We're always delighted to see them, because that's really, you know, they're there taking care of each other, and that's really important.
But you would still, if they say, look, this is happening, I don't want to involve my parents, you would still theoretically give the contraception to a 14 or 15 year old?
Yeah, absolutely. And we would help them understand why it's in their best interest for their parents to know. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure their parents would prefer for them not to get pregnant, you know, and be in a difficult situation then. So we always help them understand that. Mm-hmm. And to be honest, most parents are really, you know, like, they know their kids and they mm-hmm. know, you know, what risks are there for them, and they know to work with them mm-hmm. and to help protect them from those risks of becoming pregnant. I mean, they're young, they're in school. You know, it's important that doesn't, mm-hmm. you know, derail them from their life plan, you know.
Sorry, we'll move on. But just take a 15-year-old girl for an example. If their partner was 17, I'm not sure of the legalities of it, but I would have thought that would be potentially statutory rape. Is there any obligation on your organisation if that information is disclosed to report it to Gardaí?
Yes. And we do always ask about their partner, and we, you know, we say, oh, did you meet them in school? You know, how's that relationship going? So we do, you know, what age are they? We do always inquire about that mm-hmm. as well. Yeah, of course. That's really important.
Now,
we don't want people to be taken advantage of.
Yeah, people might sort of think this is questionable morally, but I suppose the reality is people might not want it to be happening, but the evidence is, and for those that would present to you, doctor, it is happening.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. And I mean, we see that, and it's not just Ireland, you know, it happens in loads of other jurisdictions as well, that people are having intercourse earlier. So we really need to protect them from the complications of that, you know. And as well, of course, STIs is something we discuss as well, and we give out free condoms as well, which is important to help prevent that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So you agree with the extension to 16 years of age. Does it go far enough then, in your view? Not necessarily in terms of age, but other measures. Like, what else would you like to say?
Yeah. Well, I think it should be expanded for any woman who's having intercourse and is at risk of becoming pregnant. Yeah. I think that's the way forward, because if you think about it, men and women have different life issues, and these issues affect us as mm-hmm. women, and it should be provided for by the government in care provision, and that we should not have to have an extra pay burden to be able to take care of our contraceptive.
But is there a lower age then? Is there a lower no-go age for you, Sarah?
Well, I think as doctors, we should be trusted in our capacity to engage with patients and to be able to assess them and see if they're capable of consenting, and then exploring the circumstances around their relationship, encouraging them to speak to their parents. Mm-hmm. We should be trusted to see if that's appropriate, mm-hmm. and then we can fill in an STC and get paid for that consult if we feel it's appropriate. Do you know what I mean? So,
and I'm just going to ask this question because it might come in afterwards. So say, for instance, a 14, 15-year-old girl, I'll stay with 15, 15-year-old girl comes in and it's divulged that she's having sex with a 15-year-old boy or man or whatever way you want to phrase it, right? That, at that instance, you would offer her support, offer her contraception, but there's nothing triggers to contact her parents or the authorities in relation to that if it were two 15-year-olds engaging in sexual activity.
Consent. Yeah. No, not at all. And that's, you know, their patients, autonomous patients, and we provide confidential care, so we wouldn't divulge that unless there was a risk to her, you know, but certainly in that instance, no, everything is okay. Everything is straightforward. Mm-hmm. We know that she understands the risk.
But every risk is not present. Every risk is not present, I presume, just at the point of prescription, because everyone's body might react differently to contraception. It just seems... It seems a little bit uncomfortable for me, to be honest, and it's rough. Do I even ever say it? That a 15-year-old could be prescribed a long-term medicine and begin to take that medicine without her parents being notified.
Yeah, well, she, you know, a 15-year-old is well capable of understanding the consequences of intercourse and of taking contraception and the risks involved and how to best manage them. You know, and that would be all discussed. That'd be, you know, informed decision making on her part, whether she wants to take that or not. And she's treated like an adult, you know. That's the bottom line. She's an adult. And I know that age of consent is 17, but under these Gillick competency framework, you know, we've been told by the courts, and this was a UK hearing, that we can do this, and that's what we follow. And it makes a lot of sense, you know, even talking to little kids about taking blood, I will always talk to them and say, I'm going to take some blood and this is what's going to happen.
Okay. All right, Sarah.
And this is what's going to happen. Yeah.
Okay, Sarah, thanks for your time. I appreciate it. That's General Practitioner Dr. Sarah Brennan. Any views on that, let me know, 086 60 25,000. We're going to be going to the news, which will be just a minute late.